CliffCentral.com.
All right. Well, it is Wednesday morning. Gord Laws is here. You are here with us. Sia is here with us. And we have lots of things to discuss, lots of things to get into. There's some news. I wanted to ask you guys something, though. That's been on my mind for a little while. You can get these portraits done, and people are trying to sell them online at the moment. But, you know, when I think back on, like, historical portraits, and you think about what people used to have in a portrait of themselves, like, there are a lot of these old-school portraits where people would have a monkey sitting there with them, or they'd have their favorite dog.
And that frilly neck jewel just seemed to be necessary in a lot of portraits.
But also, they'd have a certain kind of background. Now,
the neck jewel.
I know we've been thinking about, like, backgrounds because of Zoom calls and Skype and all these meetings that we have online now, these virtual meetings. So people... Some people have a fake background, which is like a beach, or they have a fake background of like a courtroom if they're a lawyer so that it looks official. I was wondering, if you had to have yourself painted and you had to have a bunch of props with you in the painting, like, what kind of stuff would you have in a painting of you?
Blackie Chan would be like a parrot on my shoulder.
Really?
She'd be looking like regal and unfazed, and she'd be on my shoulder.
Yeah.
I'd absolutely be in like a mech suit. You know those big robot warrior suits where
like
you kind of drive it from, you wear it and drive it at the same time. I'd be in that, and I'd have Blackie Chan.
A
lightsaber.
I'm glad you've actually thought about this, because I can imagine.
I'm thinking about it now, but it's a rich territory for creativity.
I mean, you know, the ancient, well, not ancient, the old Spanish monarchs used to be painted with a dwarf or a they would have someone in their
court. They took a dwarf. Yeah. How can you possibly paint so precisely using a dwarf?
No, well, the dwarf would be standing next to them.
Oy. So you got a dog that helps you blind people. A dog that helps blind people. You've got monarchs being painted with a dwarf.
What would you have?
Two this morning.
What would you have?
So they take the dwarf and paint the monarch, and then what?
Hmm. No, so they'd have a dwarf, like, standing next to them in the portrait.
How tall they are.
Yeah,
what?
For no reason. Just because. Just this dwarf standing there. It's kind of ridiculous. Yeah.
Like, you know, you've got, like, small people or whatever the affectionate, non-discriminatory term is for people who are smaller than average. And they make a living in Hollywood. Like, there's a couple of them that are, like, really, really famous in their own right as, like, prominent Hollywood small people. So I wonder if you could be, like, a really, like, a sort of almost like an underwear model of portrait dwarfs.
Yes, portrait, like, dwarves, yeah.
Yeah, and this is, like, you've got to get Kimberly Rodriguez. Kimberly Rodriguez is so hot right now. Unless you're serious aristocracy, you can't book him for a portrait for, like, 4 years.
The reason I ask this, though, is because a lot of these pictures will last much, much longer than us. So if you have a painting of someone, people tend to preserve paintings more than they would photographs, right? So if you give your great-grandchildren a portrait of you, and it's got you with your dwarf, it's going to be something that's a proud family heirloom a couple of generations down the way. So, Sia, what would you have?
That's why I like the historically inaccurate, plausible stuff, like my mech suit and my lightsaber. It's all from pop culture, and that shit in 200 years will pervade. Like, it'll be, like, vaguely, if at all, remembered, and people will see it, unless they're historically informed, and they're like, oh, this is obviously some elaborate piece of pop culture. But people will be like, holy shit, like, that was back in the day when they... I think it would be hysterically funny. I would also like to put a time capsule down and just put complete bullshit in it about what life
like
is.
Like what?
Just like we have to milk our own cat and, like, you know, we go outside and we burn the garbage and then we take the melted remains from the garbage. Yes. Like, it was my turn this week to take it to the sea. I love putting the garbage in the sea, but I really don't enjoy it. Having to do it under lockdown.
Yeah.
And, like, just trying to pretend we have, like, the most backward values.
Like dystopian shit. So, Sia, what would you put in?
Yeah.
Huh. Mine would just not necessarily be about the background, but it would just be exaggerating myself.
What would you wear?
I'd put myself on... Yeah, I'd go old school English royal. I'd be on a throne.
With your
pocket. I'd have ladies...
In the blazer, the pocket.
Very, like, military-esque. Yeah, I'd want, like, a cape and ladies-in-waiting holding that up. And then I'd just exaggerate how I look. Of course, I'd give myself, like,
Muscle. Why would you exaggerate anything about you, Sia? You're so lovely.
Oh, thank you, but no, we aren't going down that fake road.
Woody says he would have. Woody says he'd have a Minecraft jungle as his background. That's pretty cool.
It reminds me a little, it's not portraits per se, but it reminds me of something we called my mother out on a few years ago. We have a lot of pictures at home, you know, just frame pictures, pictures by the mantle, pictures by the dining room.
It's sure.
Picture crazy house. And we would notice that my mother would update her own photos every so often. And she would leave the rest of us. And we thought,
oh my God, so she would update.
You conceited bitch. You know?
The photo thing. So you should go and proactively update your own photos if you're not happy with them. Oh. I think that's fair enough. It's my house, my rules, my photos. You should be.
The rest of us are stuck in the 90s. We're stuck in the 90s with
Bucky. Your mom's memory.
Old fashions. And she is like every year when she goes on her girls' trip holiday and you know what they did at work and Christmas, she'd update all of those photos of her. So you walk around the house, you think, my, this the lady of the house is splendid and the kids
were. That's exactly right. So two different photo streams. Photo project, me and what's happening in my life lately and updating my photos as I go along.
Yeah.
And photo project, remember my children and their childhood. One evolves and changes and is supposed to, and the other one, by definition, must stay the same. So given that it's, I think you should do the same thing. You should put up pictures of your mom and those are just them, whether she likes them or not, and change photos of yourself. Do you guys have pictures of yourself? Like, unless it's like some big achievement, like receiving an award or catching a gigantic fish, do you have pictures of yourself around in your house?
So I've got pictures of me with other people, which is cool.
It's achievement things is
but
different.
The only picture of me on my own that I've got in this room is one in New York, but it's because of the background. So it's just me in Times Square with all the stuff in the background. That's
well, that's kind of it. Like,
it's more about the
pictures of yourself.
Yeah, it's more about the place.
It's more like you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more about having like a, this is a really good picture of me. I'm going to blow it up to a certain size and frame it for my house because it's me and I look great. Like, I've never understood that. Like, a framed picture of me.
Mm-hmm. No, thankfully not.
My place. You must know who it is.
Why do you have this big picture of you? Is this the best you think you've ever looked? Or is it like, does it have some meaning?
And then people get all embarrassed.
This photo is the best I've ever looked. Yeah, exactly. The one.
Yep. I'm one of those old school people who still has photo book albums, like the actual physical book. And I have one of myself with family and friends, but then I have one of me because you need to. You know, you need to chronicle all of these things. You need to at least archive it.
Oh, no. Sia only has pictures of himself. I don't believe you have anything else. I think it's all just pictures.
Gareth, in the year 2021, would you have a portrait commissioned? Like, painter?
No. I have had a portrait commissioned of my dad, because I think that's quite a cool present that I so what I did is I sent this artist a photograph of him, and then she painted it, and she was really good. And then I gave it to him as a present, and he loved it, because you'd never have one commissioned of yourself, but it's nice to give someone.
If it was done in a cool style, like, I don't mind preserving what I looked like in my sort of middle phase, like, I don't know, 30s, 40s. This was like middle of my life. After that, I was older. Before that, I was younger. I get the posterity thing. So if someone could paint it in a really cool style, like, you know, abstract colors, but someone had some cool technique where it's not supposed to look like a photo, you know what I mean? It just brings out a real good sort of your essence, I wouldn't mind. I would understand commissioning that.
Just a really...
Just let me make pictures of me a big decorative factory in my house, not so much.
Yeah, just a very good artist is often the key here, because if you have a portrait of yourself, but it's, you know, it looks like basically a printed photo that's been painted over very very basically, then that's not going to be nice. But if someone's a really good impressionist, or they can make a really interesting kind of textured portrait or something, that'll be cool. I think that'll be something.
My best is also those themed, like they're always dated to the time, the family photo portraits, and it's like always got like a weird blue soft focus halo around it, and then there's always like blue kind of fabrics and things, and everybody wears like white, blue, and red. Two new clothes that are clearly like brand new, and they all have this, and they pose like the dad's lying on his front with his foot up, and the kids are behind, and mom's like, and they, you know that no one other than mom had any say in how this went down. Yeah. And there's someone who makes a humble living doing these professionally, and they've got like the little velvet blue backdrop, and you're just like, first of all, why is that the norm for these? Who decided that that was this decade's in vogue thing? And who sees that in someone else's house and goes, fuck, that's great. Look how cute the kids look in those outfits they definitely hate. Well, and the dad looks at the shit he doesn't wear. And then
Andre,
smile.
Andre says, and Andre, I'm afraid you're on your own on this one. You know you're a 90s baby if your parents have a picture of the family dressed as Puertrackers. Now, that's... It's never happened in my family, and we actually have foot trackers in our family, so that's a hell of a thing. Dressed as foot trackers.
But I think that might be a cultural one. I think you had to be a bit off records for that.
Or a joke, maybe?
Yeah, I was going to say, count me out. There's no possibility of
but
that.
But, Sia, don't you have a picture of all of you in like skins and Zulu traditional outfits and...
Of course, yes. To honor, to pay homage to my great-great-grandfather, Shaka Zulu, of course.
Mm. You know what I'd like as my background? I'd like it to be some sort of like basic animated GIF, so it moves, but it repeats. Like you got that one where the wave laps up and then goes away, then laps up and goes away, and the tree's just doing this, so it gives the illusion of movement. I want a horde of angry but comical-looking barbarians holding up their swords and be like... And like as if they're standing behind me and like ready to like agree with what I'm saying. So I'll be in a meeting and I'll be talking and my dudes and I'm a button I can press every now and again and I cheer. Like, oh, and then they go back to sort of just being like background characters that would be the shit, and I would actually pay money for that if I could like have various there's a business idea for someone.
Yeah,
let
I
this time-stamped recording state that unless you can prove your concept existed before today, you owe me royalties if you make this because it's a brilliant idea.
I wonder if they have yet found a way to make relatively cheap screens that you can change the pictures of, but in like beautiful frames, and then you can have like an animated Mona Lisa, almost like in the Harry Potter. You know, in the Harry Potter movies where the portraits move.
The portraits,
I kind of like that. That would be fun.
I don't know whether it really like how well it actually works in practice. But one of the features of a Samsung TV that I worked on marketing, and it's similar to one that I have now. Long boring story, I won't tell. But I got massively upgraded on my TV after being screwed around a lot. I got a really nice Samsung TV worth twice what I paid for it.
Yeah.
And part of the marketing campaign for these ones with the invisible edge around the edge is that. I know mine does this. You can put it against the wall and then take a photo of the wall and then it matches the color like so that it looks like wall. But part of the campaign we did was that they displayed fine art in galleries around the world. It wasn't my idea. It was a very good idea by a young man named Jono. And they displayed fine art around galleries and you couldn't really – the idea was you couldn't really distinguish between the painting. I don't know if the idea ever got executed. But the whole premise was that it's like it can be set to look like natural wall.
I would love that.
I think you get a thin enough TV at a high enough definition, you could probably pull that off, especially if you put an ornate frame around your very good TV edge.
Yeah, that would be
cool. And I want this for my life.
I know. It's something I really want after discussing it with you guys. Okay, so we've got the dudes from T-Health joining us in a little while. Have you ever been persuaded to go for like a testosterone shot and try to keep yourself young? Do you go for facials? Do you get your hormone levels checked? Do you have any of that kind of thing on the agenda? Sia, you're way too young, even though you've turned horribly old at 26. See, I had a birthday.
No, I don't want to talk about this because, you know, I was I backed out of Botox because I was way too scared when the moment arrived. But I was talking to my cousin again, the one who's the doctor and was going to do it, because I just found these new lines.
People pay for Botox and so like, that their skin can look like yours does on its own.
No, this is like these weird lines that I have that I now hate.
Oh, it's like an abdominal.
I just don't understand.
Like a swimwear model going for gastric bypass. Like it makes no sense.
But look, it's we don't usually mention carte blanche in a good light because it signals the end of our weekend. But I think it was last week that carte blanche did this fascinating segment around the rise and rise of cosmetic surgery, particularly in South Africa over the past few months, because we're now spending so much time being aware of how we look. We're on Zoom calls, we're on Webinar Jam, and we see ourselves so much. So even though you're in a meeting or you might be presenting, but you end up going, is that really how I look? Should I do something about this?
My brother is quite a corporate person, and I tend to not let my views reflect badly on him, but he did have a very good idea, and I said to him, dude, that's actually a very good idea. It's you're not going to action this idea, you know, I'm going to tell some people, because I've got friends who are producers and stylists and set specialists and stuff. There's a potential market for people such as my brother and more executive corporate people to actually dress up their background for Zoom meetings, because people have either got a study, but it's just their study with a picture of them catching a fish and a golf ball and some books. Like, they're not usually tailored to look really like serious. And even from the books in the background that you can see to the pictures and the type of wood, like you really could get a professional in, because most people have either converted a room that's multi-purpose. It's like their guest room and their study now, or my desk's in my lounge. But if you can make an app that puts barbarians cheering when I press a button, or you can make a business making those things look mega legit for people who want to look mega legit, there's a business in it. I'm a Zoom background stylist.
Dude, you could make a ton of money, I'm telling you.
Yeah, and you could really be like very precise about it.
Especially with
psychology into it and go like, by having these books, people think that you're more empathic. And by having that book, shows that you're worldly.
Yeah.
Because people don't have Atlas Shrugged on it people will think that you're a capitalist.
That I get very easily distracted by people's backgrounds. And also if a cat runs across the screen or whatever, I get completely distracted, right? So I'm not paying attention in meetings like I should be. And because you're suddenly in someone's house, you are busy making a call about, oh, wow, that's a nice picture they've got in the background. Or, oh, my God, what a crappy lighting system they've got going on there, because you can hardly see them in the dark. So I'm constantly distracted by this shit. And I think that what Gord's saying is that this could be an incredible business. Where you actually advise people.
If you're a serious business person, or even if you like a car dealership person, you know, to do the background model cars, just make it look like you have the coolest office
in
the world. It's only like one wall of your house.
It's like set design, but just for, you know, for these.
Because your office that we can see in the background, your study, your man chamber, that's the real deal. That's like what you want. But some people could fake it and not have to actually have many books and have to read them.
No, I mean, I use this room now every day. I've been using it during lockdown more than I've ever used it in my life before, and I've appreciated it a whole lot more. But it was part of the plan from the beginning. So it's what I want to have for my workspace. And also,
stylists and producers and stuff, props people, you should really think about this potential business, because I know people will pay a lot of money
to
look tit in their meetings. I also want a crowd behind me, whether they're barbarians or something else, that I can press a few key buttons that they react emotionally. So when it's boring, they all start like falling asleep, and I can just have that suddenly happen while someone else is talking. When something's funny, they all start laughing. Or when there's a stupid idea, they're like, oh. And I can just make little passive aggressive comments with the subtle actions of my crowd behind me, or my marauding army, or my cybernetic ninja team.
Barry says it already exists, but I don't know much about that. Tell us more, Barry.
And yeah, there was also a comment I just wanted to quickly address about. It was from Tracy saying, Mr. Price is a great app, tells you the stock of each store, and the online shopping through them is great. I actually agreed with Mr. Price because I'm trying not to have car any moments that I wouldn't talk about it if they just sorted me out. But I used said app to find stock in three different stores, went to all three, and none of them had stock. So okay. that was why hunting and gathering was a failure. So just thought I'd mention that that's wrong. Please continue, everyone.
No. There's another point being made about the portraits by Carl. He says his wife wanted to take those photos that you were talking about, Gord, with the blue velvet background and the very, very new red.
the blurred edges. Yeah. And halo light.
And Carl says he had to beg her to not make them cheesy. It was a fight.
So the kid will be in brand new, too clean denim dungarees with a white button-up shirt and a collar and a bow tie, a red bow tie, and like their hair all like, you know, like
yes.
Lego, and sitting there with this smile.
Yes.
Yeah. It reminds me of why I didn't like our school picture day. It wasn't because I don't like photos, but it's because it was so manufactured. The background was fake, and then you had to sit in a certain way. Like, it was always your legs go to the left, and then you have to sort of swing to the right, and then your chest is up. No one ever looked that way. Come on.
In every one of mine, I don't have any of them on hand. I think I actually do have one or two somewhere in a photo album my mom made me for my 21st. But I always looked like exactly what had happened. I was late for it. Like the whole day, they were like, this one day, don't play hectically, don't get dirt. And I would sprint back from the far field out of breath and sweating from playing some game with like grass in my hair. And then it was always an exercise of trying to like smooth the hair onto the head. I just always looked like exactly what it was. I was like late and a bit in trouble.
My favorite movie when it comes to this stuff is that Million Ways to Die in the West, where they tell everybody that you're not meant to smile in a photo, and then someone breaks the rule and they're like the first person to ever smile in a picture, and it like freaks everyone out. Because they used to do these very serious pictures. I mean, you know, in the days of daguerreotypes and of those original kind of silver nitrate photographs that they used to do, where they'd pull the little thing and it would go, poof, there'd be a puff of smoke and this blinding white light, and people would be super serious for their picture. You know?
No, but you, a picture was a big deal. Like, not everybody could get one taken, and it was an expensive thing. And like, you went to get a picture done, kind of like how you would go and commission a statue or a fine art painting of yourself now.
All right, so this leads us on to something else, and we don't have a lot of time here, but I do want to quickly reflect on this, because you get these people who try to organize parties where in the old days before COVID we used to go out, and people make everyone dress the same because they want to have cool pictures or they want to have cool videos. So they'll tell everyone, you must all wear white or you must all wear formal stuff, like for a wedding or whatever, I understand it. But just for an ordinary party, they want everyone.
Fancy dress is a way to make your friends have to have even more work.
Yes, correct.
So it's like, you know, as you get older, it's a natural phenomenon, I think, with just about everybody in their social group, that for good reason, your friends become a bit harder to see. It becomes more of an event, and it's like cancellations. And, you know, you make an arrangement with 12 friends when you're 24, and 14 of them will show up. You make an arrangement with 12 friends 3 months ahead when you're in your 30s and 40s, and maybe half of them will show up.
Correct.
If it happens at all. So it's kind of normal, but fancy dress just adds barriers of entry. Like, it's when Jim Jefferies explained, like, how he toured the States and went on a tour of the universities and learned about drinking games. And he's like, so you're telling me, in order to drink my drink, you've got to lose this game. Like, you're putting an obstacle between an Australian and his beer. I just drop my ball on the floor, drink. It's the same. It's like, I want to make sure everyone comes to my party. So let's put an art project, an admin, as a barrier to entry.
Yeah, you don't need to make it hated. Don't make it more complicated than it already is, right?
And then you either have to be the dude that knows their last minute costume sucked, or that like arrives and is like, hey, I'm not really into it. But yeah. Oh, so I did once have my girlfriend at the time and a good homie with sponges paint my entire body green. I did my hair black, my lips black, ripped shirt, and I went as the Incredible Hulk.
Jesus, well done.
Yeah,
the commitment.
And I went as the Incredible Hulk, and I won best costume for being Shrek. True story. I've won one fancy dress party for my Shrek outfit, and I went as the Incredible Hulk.
That's beautiful. I love it. God, that could only happen.
So I went all in once and won a fancy dress, a competitive fancy dress party, and now I'm out.
Yeah. All right, well, let me tell you about this. What should you know about depression and anxiety in teenagers? Or do you suffer from hair loss? You need to get tips on hair restoration. Well, all of these questions and many more can be answered on Cliff Central's Medical Lifestyle Show. It is called the T-Health Show. It's brought to you by the T-Clinic, and it airs every Wednesday between 9 and 10 a.m., and you probably have missed one or two episodes of it, but you can also download and listen to the podcast whenever you get your podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, rather. This morning, we're going to, hopefully we can get them on the line, get to know the people behind the show, get to know more about the show, and the co-hosts will be joining us, Chris Avant-Smith and Dr. Mark Opperman, to tell us more. So I'm going to speak to them, and we'll find out a little bit about the T-Health Show. Here they are. Well, I can see Dr. Mark. Is
Good morning.
Chris. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Good, thanks, and you?
Good, man. Very, very good. So we were just introducing your show here because we haven't yet had a chance to talk to you on my show, but this is very, very exciting. Tell me about the T-Health Clinic, which you guys run, and then we can talk something about the show afterwards. Tell me about the T-Health Clinic.
So the T-Clinic came about 6 years ago, and it was when I started noticing that all my male patients were complaining about one thing in particular, and that's fatigue and a lack of performance. Most of them came in and they were in their early 40s, and this for me was strange. When I looked for a common denominator, the common denominator was that they had low testosterone levels. And by supplementing testosterone and optimizing the balance between testosterone and estrogen again, these guys started reporting that they're feeling much better, especially when it comes to energy and performance in the workplace. Their relationships improved in the sense that their wives, their spouses, their partners all said they're nicer people to be with. So, and that's where I started, and that's where it clicked.
So let me just understand, because I thought that your testosterone levels were meant to be regulated fairly naturally, and maybe the lifestyles that we lead these days have something to do with it. But can you explain to me how your testosterone levels are meant to be functioning, and why so many people need supplemental testosterone? What's happened to men that we require extra boosters now in our 40s in particular? And when you talk about performance, do you mean sexual performance, or are you just talking about performance generally?
So let's go a couple of steps back, Gareth. And firstly, it's not only men, it's women as well.
Okay.
And that's the scary part. So for men, testosterone is the primary sex hormone, mm-hmm. and it's responsible for sexual, secondary sexual male characteristics. That's what gives us a little bit of hair growth, that gives us muscle growth, that makes us strong, etc., etc. Now, this is what happens during your puberty years and into your early 20s.
Right.
And after the age of 28, testosterone naturally starts declining. The problem that we have is, over the past couple of decades, it's been proven that testosterone is decreasing exponentially. Jesus. In all men. Now, that's scary. For me, it's a combination of diet and lifestyle. If you think about the foods that we eat, most of them are supplemented with estrogen. If you think about phytoestrogens in our diets, you know, we get so many estrogens out of a diet. We don't get phytotestosterone. We get phytoestrogens.
Like what kind of what kind of food are we eating that's full of estrogen?
Meat.
Oh, really? What, is it because they pump it full of hormones? Is it because of the way they grow the meat?
Absolutely.
Shit.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So, and that leads to a decrease in testosterone. Then you also have to take a look at what is happening to our stress levels. What are we doing? Today we're sitting in offices.
Yeah.
We're not doing physical work anymore.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. I had a father-son combination. The father was in his early 60s. The son was about 28.
Mm-hmm.
The father's testosterone was double that of his son.
Wow. So it's not always an age thing. As you said, it has a lot to do with diet and exercise. Okay.
You know, but when I started the T Clinic for Men, my demographic that I had in mind was going to be men above 50 to the age of 65, 70.
Sure.
The average age of a guy that's walking through my door is below 40.
Damn. This is a problem. I mean, this is a serious problem, and obviously it affects... go ahead, Gord.
I'm very interested in this because you mentioned now that the average age is below 40. I'm almost exactly 39 and a half, give or take a week or two. And I've been losing some weight and getting my shit in order a little bit. And so I said to my doctor, look, when I'm 40, which is in 6 months, I want the full checkout. I really want to be invasive about it. Just once off, do everything, even if there's not a good reason for the test. But another thing that I want to speak to him about is about testosterone treatment, also things like growth hormone. I think now that I'm coming to 40, it's one of those things where, as well as getting like well and truly checked out, you also got to start thinking about asking the question. So I'm now becoming interested in it, and I'm 39, as you say. So Sounds about right to me.
Well, I want to just welcome Chris because he's just joined us now. So Chris is the co-host of Mark's on the T-Health show. And Chris, what's your interest in this, and how exactly did you and Mark come up with the idea of doing this show? Because clearly it's something that people are looking for. It's something that people are interested in. Chris, can you hear us?
Okay, so it seems like he's frozen.
I don't know what's happened with Chris there. See if you can get him to reconnect. In the meantime, Mark, do you want to answer the question and Gord's at the same time?
I think, Chris, are you back?
No,
okay, he's gone. So actually, we came about the show when Chris came up as a patient.
Oh, really?
And I started treating him with testosterone. Now, I'm not going to tell you. I think it's best if he tells us himself how he felt and what it did for him. What I want to emphasize here is the biggest effect of testosterone in adult patients is on the brain. It's on mood, how you function, how you relate to people, how you feel yourself, energy levels. And then, you know what, speak to women of our age, 40 and above, and speak to guys of that age. And one of the things that they would say to you that's common is a little bit of brain fog. Yeah. You know, it's just, I'm not remembering things as clearly as I used to. I can't recall as quickly. The small things slip my mind. What am I doing in this room? Why am I here?
Yeah.
Those kind of things.
I was just relating with the mic off, like that one where you know something well. It's like the name of someone. Oh. It's an album that you love from your youth, or the name of a TV show you've watched 1,000 times, and you just can't remember, and you want to kick yourself to death when you do finally remember. That happens more now for sure than it used to.
Yeah. So for me, the biggest effect of testosterone absolutely is on the brain.
And, right, so
you know what, I say that in every radio show, in every TV show that we have. When we started this a couple of years ago, no one spoke about this. It was something that.
So Mark,
especially,
I'm curious. Like, how often do you need to go for these testosterone boosters, and do you evaluate everyone based on their own levels, or do you just So, in other words, you have to go for the full blood tests, and you will then ascertain what their levels are and what kind of a supplement they need. And then, depending on that, they'll go like once a year or once every 6 months or whatever.
For new bloods, yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Every single patient is different, and this is what makes testosterone so interesting. Or hormone replacement therapy, for that matter, interesting. Yeah. I don't call it hormone replacement therapy in my practice. I call it hormone balancing. It's about keeping balance between the different hormone systems. You cannot look at testosterone on its own, not in men and definitely not in women. You have to look how it relates to other steroid hormones. Now, what a lot of people don't understand is that testosterone is a steroid hormone like your thyroid hormone, like estrogen. Your adrenal glands, most of the adrenal glands, the hormones that come from adrenal glands are steroid hormones.
Right.
They all come from one place, and that's cholesterol. So a lot of people are neglecting cholesterol now because there's such a debate around is cholesterol bad?
Yeah, I mean, haven't we discovered that, you know, the cholesterol argument is completely one-sided now? It's all about it clogging your arteries and your heart. That's what everyone's concerned about.
Well, I ask my patients the following question. We know that cholesterol forms plaques. Where do you want that plaque to form?
No.
You know, if it forms in front of a heart, you know, it's a heart attack, rush to hospital, get a stent, get a heart transplant for that matter. Does it form in one of your carotid arteries?
Yeah, that's not good.
You know, a stroke.
Yeah, sure.
What do you do then? You can't treat that. So, but besides the fact that cholesterol is important for so many things, and if you don't have good cholesterol, you can't make good steroid hormones.
So let me try and bring
unhealthy life.
I want to try and bring Chris in here. Hey, Chris, can you hear us now?
I can indeed. How's it, guys? How are you doing,
man,
today?
Yeah, nice to see you. Sorry we couldn't connect earlier. So I just wanted to figure out, because I asked the question and I don't think you heard it. How did you and Mark meet and how did you come up with the idea of the show? Because he's told us quite a lot about testosterone. He's told us about, you know, all the other effects that we need to take into consideration, the sort of subjects that you guys discuss. But I'm interested in how the show started off and how you came up with the idea for it.
Well, it was quite interesting because we were on another station and I had a daily show. And I think Mark's publicist got hold of me at one point and said, would you do an interview with this doctor? And I said, you know how these things go, Gareth? So I said, yes, okay, eventually. And we got together and we started talking about male health pretty much and how men's health is affected, et cetera, et cetera. And it took about 3 or 4 years of him coming onto the show periodically and us talking. And we then decided, okay, let's do this. Let's put a show together because we have so much content. And we've got a great rapport between each other, between ourselves. So it was fantastic.
You've been for some of these treatments of Mark's, and so you can speak about it as someone who's actually gone through it?
Absolutely. I'm 94 years old, can't you see? No. I'm on testosterone therapy. It's fantastic. I actually cannot tell you the difference it made to me within such a short space of time. You know, sort of I'm in my early 50s, actually, and I was feeling lethargic and slow, and, you know, life was becoming a real battle. Didn't want to do much except fall onto the sofa at the end of the day. Work was becoming hard. Had this real brain fog, you know, things, just things that used to come easily just didn't anymore. I had high blood pressure. I was on sleeping tablets. I was on antidepressants. And literally within about a 6-week period, I couldn't believe the amount of energy I had, the amount of focus I had. Life just took on a completely new complexion. And sort of from a work perspective, I was sort of getting back onto the top of my game. And so that was the testosterone side. And then, of course, Mark's an esthetician as well. So I get a bit of Botox and all of that. So it's a holistic approach to it.
All right, so Mark, talk to us about Botox because Sia wanted to have it. Would you recommend it? And I mean, he's like 26 years old. It would be stupid for him.
For real.
It'd be stupid for him to go for Botox, no?
Okay, so firstly, Gareth, I can't call it what you just call it. I have to call it a neuromodulator or a toxin. It's a registered trade name. There's two of them on the market in South Africa, and that's Dysport and Botox.
Okay.
So, you know, but let me just call it a toxin. Toxins are just that. They regulate our nerve endings.
But it's got the word toxic for many years. It's got the same root as the word toxic. So is it dangerous?
No, actually not. And it's probably one of the most researched molecules in the world on the market today. And the beautiful thing about it is safety lies in its action. Nothing that I do with a neuromodulator, with Botox or with Dysport, is permanent. That's its biggest asset. Literally nothing that I do with it is permanent. Look, we use it in such micro quantities. There's 2 grams of the botulinum toxin that's released by the American military per year that services the whole world.
My God.
So we use it in minute quantities. In bigger quantities, that 2 grams can kill most of the population. Yeah,
because it's like a weapon. All right, listen, I love this. Guys, we're going to have to listen to the show to find out more because we don't have any time now. But Chris and Mark, please be on standby because we're going to be calling on you on our show occasionally too. If you haven't got the gist of it from them now, then you need to listen to the T-Health show. It is on cliffcentral.com. It's on from 9 to 10 a.m. on a Wednesday. So today, 9 a.m., you can hear a brand new episode. And they've covered a whole lot of stuff, aesthetic medicine, the female orgasm and sexuality, yoga, detox, neurological disorders, depression and anxiety in teenagers, erectile dysfunction, hair restoration, and they've had other experts on many of these subjects, the effects of childhood sexual abuse on adults, to drip or not to drip, and that obviously has to do with those drip supplements that people take, right?
Yeah, IV therapies.
Right.
Today's show is going to be quite interesting, I have to be honest.
What are you doing?
We're talking about sexual dysfunction and sexual functioning in women.
Nice.
Not something that comes up a lot often.
No, I think that's great. That's a very important subject, and there are lots and lots of women who don't even realize that there are therapies for this.
Absolutely. Women know this. It's the guys that don't know this.
Well, listen, guys, thank you so much. Chris and Mark, it's a pleasure to have you both on the show, and we will talk to you soon again. That's the T-Health show today. Make sure you don't miss it at 9 o'clock on cliffcentral.com live. And if you've missed any of their shows, you can go and listen to the podcasts as well. With all the details for Mark's T-Clinic and all the rest of it is on the page as well. Very good. Thanks, guys. Very good to see you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Awesome.
Ciao.
Thanks, everybody. See you guys. Have a good
Chris,
one.
Thank you. Chris Avant-Smith and Dr. Mark Opperman. Very cool. Isn't that interesting?
I had such a good trip when he said women's sexual health is something that doesn't come up often, and I just couldn't time it.
I know.
Like a really lost opportunity.
You were itching to go there.
I was ready, and it just didn't feel right because you were doing the wrap up. Man, professionalism can be a bastard sometimes.
Sorry.
There was a lot that could have been said.
Yeah. But I mean, look, I'm legit interested. I want to find out more and just go get a consult or something. Because this is one of those things where I know that if you import the stuff from your mate at the gym that gets it off the dark web from Eastern Europe and just plug it into yourself. Mm. I've seen like it was big with when it was kind of quite unregulated and seen as a sort of a gray area ethically to do it, like bodybuilders, athletes would get it kind of illegally. And I've seen from MMA athletes, it was not considered a steroid for the early years
and it was allowed, and then they took it away. If you get the dangerous stuff, it can do some serious damage to you. So you want to make sure it's
exactly.
Proper. Yeah. Well,
but it can be incredibly therapeutic and beneficial if you do it properly. So it's one of those things where it's like, it's so great to do, but you really got to go to someone that knows what they're talking about.
Well,
so it's interesting stuff.
Yeah. Part of the reason that I think the show is interesting is because they explain it to you first. And it's almost like you get a free consultation before you have to go for a free consultation. And obviously before you have to start laying out some money and doing the stuff. So it's good. It's a good idea for you to be paying attention to this stuff as you get older,
yeah.
whether you're a guy or a girl, if you're worried about certain stuff, you know, this is what you see your GP for, first of all, and then if they refer you to someone else, you go and see people like Mark, you know. It's good. It's a good idea to do this. And also, you know, see...
Andre is the dude in the comments that always likes to complain about me, but he says... he looks better than me at 54, so his supplementation is working, and also that the problem with testosterone supplementation at over 50 is the frequent need to masturbate. So we got at least one. We got at least one listener who hates listening, at least on a Wednesday, who seems to be getting good results with it. So if you're 54 and you're still a wanker, you're doing well, Andre.
All right, very good. Let's turn our attention now to Sean Saunders. Sean is the co-founder of a fantastic company called Revix. I am frequently check in on their website because I got some money on there, just like so many of you, and it's exciting. My God, the last couple of weeks have been unbelievable in the world of cryptocurrencies, in the world of gold, in the world of the US dollar coin that they've got on there. Sean, it's good to see you. How are you, bro?
Good morning, Gareth. Yeah, I'm good. This is insane. The period, I mean, this last, what, 2-3 weeks has been just unbelievable. So, I mean, if you look then back over the last year, it's also been unbelievable. Like,
I don't know.
No one expected this to happen so quickly.
I don't know if you're like me, but I wake up in the morning and now instead of checking who's WhatsApped or what I've got to do on you know, my schedule, my calendar, first thing I do is go and check the price of Bitcoin now. And it's kind of become a bit of an addiction.
Yeah, oh, definitely. It happens to the best of us. I mean, I've had this addiction for quite a few years. I suppose when you build a business around Bitcoin or cryptocurrency in general, you start becoming really obsessed with it, and you actually have to take a step back and to say, right, okay, let's just look at the longer term price movements.
Right.
Because I mean, if you had to check the prices every single day,
it drives you crazy. I mean, I'm buying, selling, and I know that that's not very smart in the long run. You almost want to just place your bets and then just wait a long time to make the serious returns. All right, so talk to us quickly because you guys have just re-engineered your whole dashboard, and I think it looks really cool. It's a lot easier to understand and read. What's the reception been?
Oh, it's been great. I mean, there's been a few bugs we've needed to work through, don't get me wrong. Like with any release, people are finding some interesting little, you know, bits and pieces where maybe some information's a little, it's a little different to what they're used to before. But other than that, I mean, it's really, we've got a great response, loads of Google reviews. So, you know, thank you to everyone who's left us reviews on Google and, you know, who's signed up and all the rest. I think the biggest component, which a lot of people don't really know about or they haven't really experienced really, is that when they make trades now, so when you go out and you make a purchase or you make a sale, we've optimized the trade engine that we have. And what that means, I mean, trade engine sounds really fancy and all the rest, but it really means that when you go and try buy cryptocurrencies on our platform, we're not like other exchanges. We can actually go and try source you the best prices in the market. And that means every single time you make a purchase or sale, you're actually getting an advantageous price relative to somebody who is just trading on a single exchange.
All right. So I got to ask this because it's something that a lot of people are asking all over the internet. And you're no Nostradamus, but I know that you could probably help point us in the right direction. Bitcoin hit an all-time high again yesterday, 50 grand, $50,000 for a Bitcoin. Do you see things leveling out? Do you see things dropping significantly, or do you see them accelerating even faster in the next couple of weeks?
So one of the best indicators, and probably the only significant indicator when it comes to looking at crypto in general, is momentum. Mm. So you need to look at sort of what the price has been doing or what have the prices been doing over the last while, and that's generally the best indicator for what they're going to be doing in the future. Now, having said that, naturally, at some point in time, that momentum indicator doesn't become useful and the market declines. But if you look at what happened this last week, you have Canada that's come out to release the first North American ETF. Now, the reason that this is such a big deal, it's a North American ETF for Bitcoin in particular, is that all of a sudden, everyday people, so everyone that's listening to this that has a brokerage account, if you're based in Canada, you would now be able to buy Bitcoin through a licensed security-like product.
Wow.
Now, that is huge news, and not necessarily because Canadians can now invest in Bitcoin through this ETF, but generally speaking, there's a 2 or 3 month lag, and then the SEC approves a Bitcoin ETF, and that's in the U.S., and that could be a flood of money into the space. The other big news, and you know, there's never a boring news in the world of crypto, but you've had Morgan Stanley come out and they're looking at adding Bitcoin to some of their bigger funds, some of their more diversified funds. There's a lot of money in that space. And then you've had MasterCard sorry, MasterCard move into the space and say that they're willing to accept crypto on their network. So, you know, as a payment provider like a Visa, now they're happy that you could potentially be using stable coins to move value. And the thing is that this becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. All of a sudden, you've got a MasterCard, a Visa, a Tesla, on this bandwagon. More players move into the space. More people feel comfortable entering the space. There's more infrastructure built. There's a greater network effect. And then it just starts, going and going and going. And that's where we are today, where you've got a lot of momentum behind crypto. And, as soon as there's a pullback in this market, there's a lot of buyers. So if I have to kind of guess, because at the end of the day, that's the only thing I can do, if I have to guess about where this market's going to go, I don't see a major pullback. It's not to say that it's not going to happen, but I don't see a major pullback over the short term as the likely outcome. I probably see us drifting up a little bit.
If simply put, are you bearish or bullish at the moment?
I'm bullish.
Okay.
All right. Very bullish.
Just quickly, because I'm sure Gord and Sia have some questions too, but I've got to throw mine in. So the Rand is doing very well at the moment. What is driving that?
I would love to say it's South Africa, but unfortunately it's not. So the Rand acts as an emerging market currency, emerging market proxy. Mm. So when emerging markets seem more favorable and the dollar looks a little weaker, which has been the case over the last while, people move into the Rand. So just to, an interesting stat, do you know about 1/3 of South Africa's GDP is traded in terms of notional Rand volume on a daily basis? So the Rand is the most traded emerging market currency by far around the world. And what essentially that means is that if you're a hedge fund analyst or you're a portfolio manager sitting in some endowment in Europe or in the US and you want to trade emerging market currencies, you don't go and trade a basket of emerging market currencies. You actually just go out and you start trading the Rand. And that's one of the reasons people always go, the Rand strengthened, the government's done something. No, it's like South Africa doesn't really do all that much to impact its currency, certainly not over the long term. So that's the one factor. And the other factor is that, you probably wouldn't be looking at a better time for emerging market assets. Remember, you've got a lot of governments around the world that are going to be putting stimulus policies in place, already have put stimulus policies in place, and that means they're going to be building highways, they're going to be putting people back into jobs. That's going to require a lot of natural resources, and natural resources generally come from emerging markets. So that's pretty much the reason that you're seeing now 14.69 to the dollar, which is a pretty attractive exchange rate.
Fantastic.
Good time maybe to move into hard assets. So moving your rands out of South Africa potentially.
Yeah, that's really interesting stuff. I'm not sure I would bet on the rand long term, but it's easy to make those profits short term. And also, I've heard lots of people saying that the way to play this is also to short the rand when you think it's going to come a cropper against these stronger currencies. So let's ask Gordon and see if they have anything that they want to ask you before we wrap it up for this morning.
Damn it, no. I was formulating some sort of bearish joke for Gord's benefit. So that's what I was Sorry, no.
Thanks for thinking of me. No, I was actually going to ask a couple of questions about sort of entry points into the market for regular people who find the whole thing a little intimidating, but it sounds as if these platforms are intended to do just that, make it kind of a more mainstream, because it's even Bitcoin has been mainstream news for a while now. And I mean, obviously, if you don't have a general sense of it, you've obviously been paying no attention at all. But this idea of actually being able to participate still conjures images of my two friends, James and John, with their specially dedicated computers in their houses that are like permanently running some mysterious background mining operation, and they say words you don't understand, and I'm like, wow, it's intimidating, and I think I might have to join the Freemasons. So like the fact that you can just download an app, put in some money, and be like, okay, cool, I kind of can just be involved without having to like do the blood ritual. That's interesting to me, and it sounds like what you guys are doing.
Blood ritual. Well, you could put like 500 rand in Gorda, and you could just watch that move around. It's fun to do.
I'm interested in that kind of a thing.
I think entry level really is to make it super simple for everyday people to be able to invest in these emerging technologies or sectors, and that's sort of. At the moment, we focused on cryptocurrencies. So we've got these cryptocurrency bundles, which give you diversified exposure to the cryptocurrency market. So instead of you going out and just gambling on, let's say, Bitcoin or Ethereum, you could buy a basket that gives you exposure to, say, the top 10 cryptocurrencies. And that way, you kind of just sit back, you watch however the market performs, and the bundle performs in accordance with that. Going forward, we want to look at, more emerging themes. So if you think about, AI, biotech, e-commerce, gene therapy, medical cannabis, you know, all these emerging themes and sectors that people are really passionate about. I mean, people read about these various areas on a daily basis, and then you turn around to them and say, wouldn't you like to invest in those areas? And generally speaking, it's like, yeah, hell yeah, how do I do that? And that's sort of the problem that we're going to be looking to solve over the next few months.
Well, listen, Sean, always good to check in with you. Thank you so much. I see Bitcoin heading right up again towards the $50,000 mark. So it's going to be an interesting day and another couple of interesting days, I'm sure, after that. Go to revx.com, sign up today. And, Gord, this is for people like you who are a bit nervous, not entirely sure of how everything works. They make it as simple as possible for you. You can find out more by following them on the social media at Revx Invest. That's REVIX, just in case, because I actually got an email from someone the other day, Sean, who said, I've been listening to you guys talking about this Rebix, REBIX, for a long time now, but I can't find it anywhere on the internet. So, no, it's Rebix.
Oh, come on.
REV, look at Sean's shirt, REVIX.com, and you can find out more there. Awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Gareth. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Cheers. Have a great rest of the day. Chat to you soon.
Cheers, bro. Bye. All right, Gordo, thanks. Nice to have you back, sir.
Yeah, it's good to be back. We'll do it again.
Good. We'll look forward to it. Now, listen,
I didn't know about a lot of stuff. I get like added value with this news avoidance thing because it's fascinating. It's not just rehashing the headlines and kind of getting opinion on them. I feel like I'm checking in with a distant planet where people know about things. I'm like tracking Blackie Chan's migratory patterns and like keeping track of.
Oh. Hey,
that at different times of the year, the shadows cast differently in my garden. So, yeah, it's nice to get caught up with society.
It is indeed. And don't forget that we're going to play out an insult from Jane that she sent to you. We'll probably get to yours in about...
I'm so glad you're going to play this totally unnecessary and horrifically unfair thing that's not based on truth.
Well, you can always send your reply, your reply.
Just don't wonder why I don't sometimes come back.
No, everybody's being insulted, Gord. It's not just you. Last week, Jane was very insulting to someone else, and she will continue. She was insulting to Alan Ford last week. She's insulting to Ben. You must hear the one she said to Ben. It was very rude. And then
I just want the record to reflect that this incident that's about to be discussed and has been discussed ad nauseum, literally and figuratively on the show, is the only such incident I can remember having in at least 10 years. I've never blocked a toilet before or since.
I only did it twice.
The first time, I thought there was something on the day not right with the toilet, and I tried to sort it out and couldn't, and I was like, well, the toilet's fucked today. The next time, it happened again, and I was like, this toilet doesn't work. So you guys have a broken toilet with no sign on it. I was the victim of using someone's broken toilet that didn't have a broken sign.
You forced me to do it. That's what actually happened. So I'm going to end the show with a very lavatorial thing, but here's Jane's message to Gord.
This is unnecessary and bullshit.
All right, here it is. Here's Jane's special insult for this week. It's for Gord Laws, all right?
Do you know, this morning when I arrived in the bathroom, I saw some shit. I thought maybe you are in the office. But I'm so happy because you are no longer coming to the office because I don't have to clean some shit every week. Sometimes you even forget how to flush the toilet. Do you do the same thing at your house or what? You know, but you know what?
No.
God, you must go to hell.
Toilet work.
Clean yourself. Pull up your socks and clean your shit all the time in the bathroom. Sure.
Very, very vicious.
Get a working toilet. So, was this so vicious? But like, serious question: was there an incident at the old office? Because obviously, I haven't been there in over a year.
No. So we've introduced something new where Jane gets to insult someone once a week. And this week it was your week.
Oh.
So don't panic.
I thought there was an actual shit incident in that toilet. And I'm like, why is that still happening?
No, there's no one. No, hardly.
It is pretty horrific for somebody else to have to sort that problem out, and it's definitely a recurring problem.
Yeah, Jane was.
I'm about to have my breakfast, but clearly I'll put that on pause.
So there we are, everybody. Anyway. That's the insult of the week from Jane Malachi, and we'll have her addressing Ben Karpinski and Dory and a whole lot of other people in the next few weeks. So stick around for that. All right, thanks, Gordo.
Exciting times. Love you guys.
Love
except
you,
Andre. Bye.
Bye.
CliffCentral.com.